From NPR News, I'm Ira Flatto with Science Friday. A few weeks ago, North Korea's latest rocket soared over Japan, traveled about 2,000 miles east of the launch pad, farther than any North Korean missile has ever flown. But then the rocket and its payload splashed into the Pacific, according to American experts. But North Korean officials said that they had successfully launched a satellite, which is now orbiting the Earth and beaming back revolutionary songs. Some observers suspect that the intent of the country might have been to test intercontinental ballistic missiles. So countries like South Korea and Japan and the U.S. move destroyers into nearby waters with anti-missile systems ready to go, just in case. But how good are those systems? Would they have been able to take down a rocket aimed at us? Joining me now to talk about that and the future of missile defense is Mike Schuster. He is a diplomatic correspondent and the roving foreign correspondent for NPR at NPR West in Culver City. Good to have you on Science Friday, Mike.
Good to be here, Ira.
How serious was that test?
Serious in what sense?
Well, I mean, were they trying to put a satellite in space, or what are people saying, or was it really a test of an ICBM?
Well, unfortunately, I think in the public domain, the information, there's not enough information to actually firmly answer that question. The North Koreans said that they were going to put a missile in, they were going to put a satellite in orbit. They claimed that they did it successfully. The United States has enormous sensing assets on at sea, on land, and in space to track this thing. And the United States came to the conclusion that no, they didn't put a satellite in orbit, and that this might have been more of a long-range missile test under the guise of being a space launched vehicle. Right. So we're there with the two versions, Ira.
Yeah, we've been talking about missile defense for 50 years now. And they used to talk about hitting a missile with a missile, or hitting a bullet with a bullet. Could we hit? Do we have technology now that would have been set up in place and shot? Could we shoot down a North Korean missile like that now?
Well, we have technology that's in place and deployed that could attempt to shoot down a North Korean long-range missile, or the possibility of a warhead that it might put on a trajectory to hit the United States. These are the ground-based missile interceptors that have been deployed in Fort Greely, Alaska, and at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. And they could have been put on alert, and they are active and operational. So if there was, in the first couple of minutes of flight, there was a determination that that missile or rocket from North Korea was going to hit the United States anywhere, it's possible that the U.S. military would have activated the missile interceptors in Alaska or California to try and shoot it down.
Could that work in the other direction, or coming from Iran, let's say? Do we have something that could tackle that if they had one? And we don't know if they have one, do we?
Well, they've never tested a really long-range missile, and they certainly don't have anything. Neither country has anything approaching intercontinental ballistic missile capabilities. But the Iranians are developing their missile technology. There's no question about that. The Bush administration had proposed to deploy 10 missile interceptors, like the ones that are in California and in Alaska, in Poland, and put a special advanced radar in the Czech Republic in order to defend against just such a possible threat of missile attack from Iran. Short of that, I believe that the United States has deployed missile interceptors of a couple of kinds on Aegis cruisers and destroyers, and there very well may be a couple of these Aegis cruisers and destroyers with anti-missile capability in the eastern Mediterranean and in the Persian Gulf to guard against the possibility of missile launch from Iran.
But this is really secret stuff, is it not?
Well, not entirely. The Pentagon has, for the last 8 or 10 years, has been testing these things, and it's pretty public knowledge that they feel confident that the missile interceptors that have been tested on the Aegis cruiser may represent, for the threat of short or medium range missiles, a real capability, and they've begun to deploy them. When I did a series about this last year for NPR, the Navy and the Missile Defense Agency at the Pentagon said that they were going to, by this past fall, they were going to deploy some of these Aegis cruisers and destroyers with anti-missile capability, and I think that they've done it.
Yeah, excellent five-part series. Could our current system work against a more sophisticated attack, the kind we used to think, worry about the Soviet Union and the multiple missile approaching?
No, it couldn't. It's not large enough. The number of long-range interceptors that the United States has deployed doesn't really exceed around 20. That's certainly not enough to guard against an attack, if it were effective technology, if we really knew that it was effective, to guard against an all-out attack from Russia, which has hundreds, if not thousands, of warheads on ICBMs. Mm-hmm. So, no. And in fact, the Pentagon and advocates of missile defense have been saying throughout these years that this is not deployed to guard against an attack from Russia or even against China, although China's ICBM arsenal is far smaller. And the Chinese believe that the United States could use it against them in a time of crisis.
What are the big difficulties that you have to overcome technologically to make a system work?
Well, there are several. One is that offense can overwhelm defense. There right now are far fewer defensive missiles than there are offensive missiles in the hands of potential adversaries. The offensive missiles are faster than the defensive missiles. But the real key is that if you're talking about intercepting an intercontinental ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead, there are three phases in its trajectory. Boost phase, when it starts and ascends. Mid-course, when it goes into space and deploys the warhead. The warhead separates from the missile. And the terminal phase. And our ground-based interceptors in Alaska and California are designed to intercept in the mid-course. And this essentially means that the potential hostile missile puts a warhead in space traveling very fast, and the missile interceptor from the United States deploys what they call an exo-atmospheric kill vehicle. This is not a nuclear weapon or an explosive, but like you said, a bullet smashing into another bullet. It's designed to crash into the incoming warhead. And if we're dealing with nations that have sophisticated rocketry and missiles like that, they could very well deploy multiple warheads, which would overwhelm the defenses, or they could deploy a single warhead and what they call countermeasures or decoys that look like the real warhead and in space behave like the real warhead. And it has been very difficult for the United States to develop effective technology in order to distinguish between the decoy and the real warhead.
So you might be shooting at the wrong thing.
Exactly.
At the decoy. And so that's the problem of hitting them when they're really in space above the Earth's atmosphere and going up there. What about trying to get them right after they launch off the launch pad where you know where they are? And they haven't deployed their warheads yet.
Many advocates of missile defense argue in favor of what is called a boost phase capability. But it's the one phase in the trajectory of a hostile missile that hasn't been attacked yet, metaphorically speaking. The United States, during the Bush administration, was developing a couple of capabilities that were meant to attack hostile missiles in the boost phase. One is an airborne laser, that is a high-powered laser carried on a 747. Another is something called the Kinetic Energy Interceptor, which is a super-fast missile that could chase the hostile missile and try to catch up with it. But both of these technologies are only in their development phase. They haven't been deployed. They're untested. And it looks like, actually, in the new Pentagon's budget, the money for research and development in those areas is going to be cut back.
I thought I'd heard that the president had canceled the laser plane idea.
Well, the Bush administration wanted many of them. They wanted six or seven or more of them over time. It hasn't really, the first one hasn't been thoroughly tested. There is one out there that I think the Obama administration will continue to fund, but not subsequent ones.
It's also more than just a hardware problem, is it not, Mike? You have to have sophisticated computers and hundreds of millions of lines of computer code that have to run.
Well, there are lots of computers and lots of communications and lots of radar. My sense is that radar and space sensors are the key communications links in this whole thing. And the United States has been developing very sophisticated, advanced phased array radars. Now, if you don't ask me much about the technology of that, but these are very high-powered, long-distance radars that have been deployed in Japan, forward-based in Japan. I think that there's one in England. And then there's this floating one called the Sea-Based X-Band Radar that's quite extraordinary, Ira. You may have seen pictures. It's a white giant golf ball sitting 200 feet above the surface of the sea on an oil drilling platform. And it can move around. They can move it around the globe, and it has extraordinary capability. They let me go inside it and see it when I was doing my series for NPR last September.
Now, sometimes I look at those as the dummies. I mean, from the point of view that maybe the real things are out in orbit looking down. Why do you need a radar looking over the horizon if you have a space, if you have a satellite overhead that can look straight down?
Well, I think that they do different things. The radar, they also are put together in order to be able to track a hostile missile. It's not just to determine that one is there, but to follow it and then give enough information to the ships or the ground-based array of missiles in order to be able to track it and then launch attack missiles and lead them to the right point. So my sense of this is that the requirements for recognizing and tracking hostile missiles at such speeds are so enormous that there are many surface radars that are needed on land and at sea, coupled with the capabilities in space.
How often are we going to see tests of these systems now?
Not very often. There were some tests in the late 90s and into the Bush administration. They are very expensive. Many of them, or several of them, were not successful. The Missile Defense Agency, which is the component in the Pentagon that develops this, has gone to simulated tests that are done in the computer. They are very expensive. I think that a single test can run the government $100 million. So they like to test at least once a year, but the test program has been controversial. It's been criticized by Congress. The Missile Defense Agency is reluctant to spend that money, and it's not clear when the next test will be. By the way, though, I did go out on an Aegis cruiser that was testing a shorter-range missile interceptor last summer, and it was a successful missile intercept. And again, it cost a lot of money, millions of dollars.
Of course, the criticism about those is that they're very simple tests, not the kind of thing you'd get in a real launch.
Exactly. They're criticized as being unrealistic, where the intercepting missile or the intercepting weapon system, like the Aegis cruiser, knows more than it would in a real operational war. But I think that the Pentagon at least makes a coherent argument that they've got to start with tests like that and build up to realistic tests that that mimic what the battlefield might be like. And that hasn't occurred yet.
Mm-hmm. One last quick question. If they intercept a nuclear weapon, does it blow up like a nuclear weapon, or does it just fall down?
That's a good question. I think that my understanding of nuclear weapons is that they have to arm themselves. They have to be armed at a certain point in order to detonate. And then the question becomes, have they armed themselves in the mid-course, or do they arm themselves at the end of the trajectory? And my guess is that somewhere in there they arm themselves. The exo-atmospheric kill vehicle doesn't explode. It's meant to actually hit and break up this thing. And my guess is that's, I'm not sure about this, Ira, but my guess is this is in order to prevent a nuclear detonation.
Well, we're talking like Dr. Strangelove all over again, 40 years later. Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome, Ira. Mike, it's good to be with you.
You too. Good to see you. Mike Schuster is a diplomatic correspondent and the roving foreign correspondent for NPR at NPR West in Culver City.